pre-war adjustment. So sorry for that. Hopefully this room is more stable in terms of technology than the room we come from. And therefore the venue will then be permanently moved to this venue until we're done with our proceedings. So we will work from the old assembly chamber going forward. Once again, apologies to the professor and to everybody else concerned. Because we were midway through and it wouldn't make sense, Advocate Bernardo, we're going to allow you. It is just past 10:15. You have until 11 o'clock, and there's a clock, fortunately, in this room, honorable members and everybody concerned, so you can double-check yourself when you talk. It's a five-minute rule. For everybody beyond professor and advocate. It's just, as I indicate, just past 10:15, advocate, you have got until 11 o'clock. And we will take it from there. We're going to start with you, Honorable Killian. We'll be the first one thereafter. Over to you, advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the stage where you were discussing the relationship between the board as well as the group CEO and their management team.
I think in a statement,
it is fair to say, it is important to state that the chief executive of the FABC, Ms. Mhobo, at the time was not well supported at all. In fact, she went around as a persona non grata in the organization that she led as the head executive. People look up to her to get direction, but if she is browbeaten and her back is not straight because she does not enjoy the support from where she should get it, things don't go well at all. Unfortunately, that reality dawned to us very early on that there was a very poor relationship between the chairman and the chief executive of the SABC. And Ms. Mhobo frightened me all the time, because all the time you looked at her, even though she's a very strong professional woman, she looked like she could drop dead anytime, because she was a bundle of nerves. She was not happy at all.
Prof, your own experience, because you would have interacted with the executive directors within the board, because they are part and parcel of the board. What was the relationship between the group CEO, Ms. Mhobo, and the group COO, Mr. Dawid Musoleni?
Look at it this way. Ms. Mhobo, it became very clear to us that she had had her power, her prerogative, and her scope usurped by the acting COO. And there was a relationship that all the time showed contempt towards the chief executive. And we were faced with a very strange situation where the chief executive was undermined, and she did not matter. Even at times when major issues were being discussed, even at times when we're looking at strategy, she was not the one talking about strategy. It was another arrangement altogether. But the question you've asked is the relationship between the CEO and the COO. It was lopsided. It was a lopsided relationship where clearly the power was with the COO.
Thank you. salvation.
The board works in a particular manner. The board does not approach the executive from any and every direction. The board works through its leader, the chairperson of the organization, the chairperson of the board. And of course, some of us approach the chairperson of the board and talk with her about the conditions which we saw, and we made our effort to try and first achieve an improved relationship between the two ladies, so that that improved relationship could take us into an improved relationship between the chief executive and her staff. But I think a lot of things have happened already. You know, quite frankly, it has reached a point where Ms. Mhobo no longer believed she wanted to remain in the organization. She felt she had been so let down that she did not want to stay any longer in the organization.
Let's go back to the public protector's report. It's one of the documents that the board, your board, has to implement its remedial actions. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
The report did not necessarily deal with the issues that emanated within the duration of your process, correct?
Yes, sir.
But there was a legal obligation on the board that you were part of to implement those remedial actions, correct?
Yes, sir.
The evidence before the committee points a picture where the chairpersons of subcommittees had to look at the report, eliminate issues that affected their portfolios, and report back to the board. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You were within the HR committee amongst others, is that correct?
I was the chairman of the HR in Ramco.
How did the HR committee deal with the public protector's report?
Sir, I convened a meeting through the company secretary of the Human Resources and Remuneration Committee to look at the specific issues which had been raised by the public protector regarding, in particular, the then acting COO. And we had very vigorous discussions around the issue. And the intention of the HR committee, the majority of us, was to implement the remedial recommendations or the remedial directives of the public protector. One very clearly was that a disciplinary investigation had to take place around the appointment of the then COO. We debated that for a long time, but I have to say that the meeting that this matter was at which this matter was discussed ended up in serious acrimony because we could not all agree, even though the majority of us agreed that we had to take that action, we had to implement the recommendation from the report.
Now we know that as late as yesterday, the Western Cape High Court has redirected the disciplinary proceedings of Mr. Mtsone. Why and how did we get there? Why did it have to take a court for the second time to have the board implement the public protector's remedial action?
Sir, I have to once again remind this honourable committee that I resigned and left the board of the SABC in early January 2015. I have been out of that board for about 2 years now. But what happened during my time was that when we tried to reach a point where we would address this point, this issue, we could not reach this point because not all of us agreed that such action needed to be taken, even when this matter was discussed at the board. Unfortunately, sir, I did not have the benefit of access to minutes and documents which I would have liked to bring here to show the record of our discussions, the debate around that issue. There wasn't an open way for us to go to this. I remember that Mr. Vuso Mabuso, Mr. Lubisi, Mr. Ronnie Lubisi, who were also on that committee, were in agreement, but not all of us. The chairperson of the board was also on the committee. We did not have an agreement to take this matter to where it should go. When we took the matter for discussion at the board, again, it split the board. It was one of the most vexing matters for us to deal with. But to tell you, sir, where I stand as chairman of HR and Remco, we wanted this matter to be dealt with as it had been recommended by the public protector.
Let's move to a meeting where you, a special meeting, where you were called to discuss and recommend the appointment of the COO. Can you tell the committee the circumstances surrounding the convening of that meeting? How did you get to know about the meeting?
It was a meeting, sir, that was rather impromptu. We were called for a special meeting and it took place in the evening. It was preceded by a meeting in Mahalisberg where we were looking at the human resources management strategies, where we met with the new minister then, the Honorable Faith Ntambi, for the first time. We then were convened by the chairperson of the board, when we got to the meeting, we were read a letter which came from either the representatives of Mr. Mtsweneng or Mr. Mtsweneng himself, the then CEO, acting COO. It was motivating, making a case or raising a question, why has he not been appointed on a full-time basis as a COO of the organization.
Before we get to the agenda of the meeting, I just want to understand, this was not one of your standard board meetings.
It was not, sir.
It was a special meeting.
It was a special board meeting. There were many special board meetings, by the way, very, very hastily arranged for a number of reasons.
Did anyone explain the urgency of this meeting?
The person who addressed us, sir, was the chairman of the board, Miss Ellen Shabalala. She read the letter, and it was necessary that we look at this issue of the appointment of Mr. Mtsweneng. And I think some reference was made to the fact that there was a concern on the part of the minister, which was also expressed during our Mahalisberg meeting, that he had been acting for a long time. And that seemed to be the urgency that we were faced with.
But why did it not wait for the next scheduled board meeting?
That is what baffled us. That is what caused us to ask questions. That is what caused us to say, what can we look at now Because when you are to consider, when you are to deal with a matter such as that, because the proposal at the time was that we should do the appointment. Of course, when you have to do a thing like this, a number of documents, a number of things have to be before you. A serious motivation now, not a complaint that this appointment has not been made. That does, you know, what you need is documentation which state the case why. Why does the person qualify? Why should such an appointment be made? And above all, why should it be made now?
The remedial actions contained in the public protector's report, particularly in view of the lack of appetite displayed by the board in dealing with the specific issues that pertain to Mr. Mutsoni. Did that report play any role in the decision to employ him?
Yes, it did indeed. And I have to correct any perception, sir, that the board as such did not have appetite to deal with the matter. At that time, the board was dichotomized. There were people who did not seem to have such an appetite, who were pushing back against looking at those directives or remedial action, and there were people who were looking at the imperative of good corporate governance. So it cannot be true that the board did not want to deal with the matter. The board was split over the matter, and that was the case that night again, because the issue of those remedial actions came up other than the fact that there was a view that due process had not been followed. Some of the members of the board raised the issue of the unfinished business from the report of the public protector.
I understand in any meeting situation of a board, there will be discussions, there will be arguments for or against a particular matter that is subject of a discussion. You will try to find each other, correct?
Yes, sir.
But ultimately, the board takes a decision.
Yes.
Either by consensus or by vote.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And whether you were against the issues that were discussed in that decision, once the board takes that decision, it becomes the board decision.
Yes, sir.
So I do concede to what you're saying that at the board there were divergent views
yes.
on how to handle
yes.
the remedial actions. But the net effect we need to concede is that the board did not accede to the view that says let's deal with the remedial, let's implement the part to protect the remedial action. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Therefore, that was the decision of the board not to deal with the remedial actions of the public protector, correct?
Strictly speaking, sir, that was the decision of the board. It doesn't matter any longer. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about who voted for or who voted against, but the majority of the board members, in fact, that evening, took a particular decision, and that became the decision of the board, and that's how it worked.
In this exercise, because we're piercing the corporate veil, how did you vote when it came to the voting on whether or not to employ Mr. Mutsoneni as a permanent CEO?
I voted against it, but also to give background to that, I had a duty to disallow that matter to be discussed at all. The main thrust of my argument or my participation that evening was that this matter should not serve on the board at all that evening, because as chairman of HR and RAMCO, I should have been bringing a recommendation from HR and RAMCO following due process. Due process had not been followed, leading to that meeting that evening. Therefore, that meeting was out of order. In fact, it was not correct to discuss that matter, the manner it was brought onto the table. And a good part of the evening, in fact, was on that particular issue, when I said, please, no discussion of this matter. This matter must get off the table. If there must be an appointment of a permanent COO, due process must be followed. And a number of issues, if the gentleman concerned aspired for the position, he had to look at his circumstances, he had to apply, he had to qualify or not qualify, but that had not taken place. And I voted against it. I know that this matter, you know, was well publicized thereafter.
The cabinet policy around migration from Malala to Dita had related to the set of boxes.
Yes, sir.
Was the minister at the time, and what were his views around or these directions, policy directions? I'm asking this question in line with the contract that was later signed with MultiChoice.
Mr. Chairman, at that time, the memory serves me well. The agreement had already been signed with MultiChoice, but there was a serious debate around digital migration and policy, and what our view was as a board. We had to submit our view regarding whether there had to be encryption or not. At that time, the minister was the Honourable Yunus Karim, who visited the board at least twice to come and explain what the policy, where the policy status, what the policy status was. And there, those meetings, in fact, made us realize, those of us who were new, that there were many, many things that were happening, that the conveyor belt of issues was overloaded. One of the heftiest issues was the issue of the set-top boxes. And there was a strife in those meetings. Very, very serious contentions during the meetings. In fact, very, very embarrassing altercations between certain board members and the minister, to a point where there were accusations and counter-accusations. You'll recall, sir, that Ms. Mhobo, at a certain stage, stated that she was accused of having her children working at CTV. There were other board members who were accused of the same. And again, MultiChoice was being discussed. Its name was being thrown around as well in the accusations and counter-accusations. At a certain point, in fact, he did this twice, if not thrice. The minister felt that we were suspicious of him. We were treating him with suspicion as a shareholder representative, and that we did not seem to want to understand that he had no interest in that issue whatsoever, and that he wanted a movement forward. Thrice, he offered to take a lie detector test so that we could prove that there was nothing corrupt about what he was doing, that he was just doing his job, and that he was wanting for movement forward in that case. In each of those instances, at least twice, I think, I prevailed on the minister and told him that, minister, please don't embarrass us. We are not suspicious of you. We do not want you to take a lie detector. So please refrain from offering us that. And the minister said, look, you know, I want for this matter to move forward. And there are insinuations and innuendos that seem to come from certain board members, you know, and those of us who were new did not have the institutional memory to relate to some of those issues. It was hugely embarrassing for us. Unfortunately, the minister left before that issue was resolved. But it is important that this was one of the issues, in fact, that have been very, very difficult during the time of that board.
Just one thing that I almost forgot relating to the employment of the CEO. There's evidence before this committee, and I think you also briefly touched on a meeting in Johannesburg, where the minister told the board in the, that bilateral that you had to appoint Mr. Mswane. In light of that statement and the subsequent employment of Mr. Mswane as the permanent CEO against all odds, would you attribute the statement by the minister as an undue pressure on the board?
Such a call, obviously, is raises eyebrows if it's isolated like it was. If the minister was saying that there are so many acting positions in the organization, one of the things that I expect is that these issues must be addressed and we must have permanent staff. You know, that would have been fine. And in fact, you know, I must say for the minister that she did point that out, but what stood up at that meeting was the focus on Mr. Mswane. But then I go back to the board. You know, why some of the board members stood firm on that evening? When a shareholder representative of any company raises an issue, the board must always remember that while it is answerable to a shareholder or a shareholder representative, underline answerable or accountable to, its ultimate responsibility rests with this legal entity, this legal person called the company. In this particular case, the SABC. There are certain things that we have to do in terms of the law as well as policies of the organization. It behoved, is it correct English? The members of the board to then say, policy is this. This is how we appoint people. If a position comes up, it must be advertised, shortlisting must happen, interviews must occur, eventually the responsible committee brings it to the board and then the board recommends to the minister. That process was not followed. So I would like to say, whatever the role of the minister, it was incumbent on the board to make sure that they play their role. Boards are accountable to and are answerable to shareholders and shareholders' representatives, but their ultimate responsibility, the best interest to which they work is the organization and the organizational policies.
You resigned.
Yes, sir.
Immediately before that, you had received a letter from the Minister of Communications, Ms. Mutangi, asking for reasons why you shouldn't be suspended. Can you share the circumstances surrounding that with the committee?
The letter that I received did not talk about suspension. The letter that I received said I had to state reasons why it should not be recommended, she should not recommend to the president that I be removed from the board. It was the strangest thing ever to occur to me. In all my corporate life, I had never been faced with a situation such as that. What even made it more strange is that at the Magaliesberg meeting, at the time that we met with the minister for the first time, at the session that I led as chairman of HR and Ramco, which because it was a threat session of HR, the minister and I had a discussion, and she affirmed my background. She affirmed my experience. She affirmed my knowledge and commitment. And she asked me, please, Prof, I would like you to please help play a role. We must make it work with SAPC this time around. And I pledged that. And other members, I'm sure, pledged that if they were so asked by the minister. After that, not long from that time, the minister, in fact, shortly before that, that letter was received, the minister gave me a call. I was in Pretoria for business unrelated to SABC. And she called me to her office quickly. And I went to her office. And she said, I would like to just discuss issues at the SABC. And let's just talk about what is happening there and what are the problems, etc., etc., etc. In the course of our discussion, as I was saying, that it is really getting very serious. She wants to know, she wants to remedy challenges where there are challenges. I said, Minister, give me your word. I'll talk with you as openly as I can if you seek to resolve issues. And let's discuss issues at the SABC. We discussed with the minister. We're open with each other. It was a very good meeting. And she made me feel know about what she felt and what she thought about different things and about different people. I mean about everybody, including some of the names we've mentioned here. But of course, it was a confidential meeting. And she said to me, Prof, before we read that, she said, I said to her, Minister, I want you to know that I would like to resign from the board of the SABC. I've been wanting to resign from the board of the SABC. She was shocked. She said, why? I said, no, things are not going well. We are making an effort and we discussed all those issues and so on. But she prevailed on me. She said, please don't go. Stay. If you leave, you are one of those people that if you leave, things will fall apart. Prof, I am counting on you to help me turn around and stabilize the SABC. We discussed at length. I took it very, very seriously. She gave me her cell number. She said, here's my number. Let's keep contact. Let's talk with each other. And I even assured her during that meeting because there were words such as, you know, some of the people are wanting to be chairman, et cetera, et cetera. I said, Minister, I'm okay with being a board member, you know. I'm not looking for anything. Once upon a time, a colleague of mine taught me a very interesting word, sapiential authority. He said, you don't have to hold a higher position than the one you hold to be influential. You use your sapiential authority. I value that. I thought, you know, leadership can take place anywhere you are, given your experience and whatever you bring in. We discussed that with the minister. We left that meeting, again with a request, please, Prof, don't go, promise me. And I said something that I had said also at Magaliesberg. I said, Minister, I'm going to say something that may sound odd. I'm very respectful. I respect authority. You are the shareholder representative. I sit on your board. But you are young enough to be my daughter. And I'm old enough to be your father. I will do everything to make sure that your attempt becomes a success. As long as we are truthful with each other and we work with honor, I will make sure that I play my part. I've served on a number of boards. I want to focus on my businesses now, but I will see my term through, my term as a board member through. We left the meeting, it was great, and so on. We went on, we kept the confidentiality and so on. Not long thereafter, then we received this letter. When I received my letter, it was one of those best off times during December in Northern KZN. You know, I'm a vegetarian, but at that time, if you know KZN, they have slaughtered a sheep on the 24th of December. It's going to be Christmas tomorrow. Everybody's happy, families together. When I received an email, here is a letter from the Minister of Communications with the content that we discussed earlier. I was shocked cold. I sat for a while. I withdrew from the company of the family. I read the letter again. I was shocked. I kept it away from the family. I didn't discuss it with family. The following day, on Christmas Day, I tried to raise the minister. I called her. And on the number that she had given me, she did not answer. I tried, she did not answer. I thought, well, she's busy probably with family things. I tried her also on Family Day, 26th of December. She did not answer. I called Mr. Dan Manja, the advisor of the minister. And he said, no, I don't believe that, Prof. No, I don't believe that. That letter was not meant for you, you know? You know, such a letter, no, it was not meant for you. See, the minister wants to fix things. There are people that she is wanting to get sorted out in that board. But no, it's not, we are not one of them. I said, no. The letter comes to me, it's addressed to me, and I have never found myself in a situation such as that before. Then I came back, and I was communicating with the fellow. He kept giving me assurance. I gave him a message to send to the minister, to tell the minister that I'm very concerned I've received this letter, and she has not picked up my call. And I never got an answer. When January started, in the first week, I called him again. We discussed it. He assured me, I've spoken to the minister. No, it's not meant for you. Don't resign. She was shocked to hear that you are thinking of resigning as a result. I said, look, I'm going to resign. You know, if she does not come to me, back to me, I'm going to resign. If the letter is not meant for me, it must be withdrawn. You know, at least she must afford me the courtesy of a reply, of a response to my call. That did not happen. You know, I then resigned from the board. I stated in my letter that when a shareholder displays diminished commitment or confidence in a director, then it is incumbent on that director to review his circumstances. I sent the letter in. I got media inquiries. I had not spoken to one journalist. It's not my style. And when the media inquired, I did not want to talk to the media. But I heard that the minister denied that she got my resignation over a few days until it was confirmed that I had resigned. And the media wanted to talk to me. I said, now I've resigned from that board, I will not discuss matters of that board. So that is how it happened. You know, I resigned of my volition, but it was precipitated by this strangest of behavior. Up to today, I've not received a call or a response to my letter.
No further questions, John.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Honorable Killian, your 5 minutes starts.
Thank you, Chairperson. Prof, could you perhaps tell us, how soon afterwards did you get confirmation from the appointing authority, the President's office, that your resignation is accepted?
Honourable Member, I don't recall receiving such confirmation. I actually may have myself misdirected my resignation letter because I sent it to the Minister. I may have needed to send it to the appointing authority. I actually sent it to the Minister.
Thank you. Secondly, I would like to ask you, Prof, you paint a picture, and particularly on page 7, you paint a picture of a person with immense personal power, stating that he is the SABC. You're also saying that he's disdainful of organizational protocol to the point of being callous. You're saying he could not be questioned and he could not be called to order, etc., etc. So he reigns free. He made announcements on behalf of the board that the board was not aware of. Where do you think he derived that power from? Was there a change in his behaviour when the new Minister of Communication was appointed after the elections? Was he behaving differently before that time? Because you came in at the end of 2013,
yes.
If I'm correct.
At the best of times, using management speak or behavioral speak, you would call this gentleman a type A personality. And you may actually call him a type A personality gone wrong. You know, here you are talking about a very energetic person and a person who is not a fool, who is smart, a go-getter, a mover and shaker. The only problem that you have is that this individual is no respecter of corporate governance. In fact, he has no tolerance of governance. He wants to work in a manner that I tried to describe earlier. He wants to have unfettered power and prerogative. I think he derives his power, his assurance, his confidence from himself. You know, first he believes that he can manipulate, if you like, anybody to be agreeable with him, and he finds certain people agreeable, supportive of him. This is not a person who does not take notice when you put your foot down. You know, I've seen the person we're talking about respond when you put your foot down. And he thinks twice. And he requests a meeting. He wants to talk with you. He wants to negotiate a new interactive contract with you. Because he's shocked by this thing that is not being used to being called to order. You know, with good leadership, with a firm hand, I don't think that, you know, he would not listen. But in the circumstances where he's being allowed leeway, he's being supported, he behaves in this manner. I'm sorry, Honourable Killian, if I'm not...
I would just like to know, the mere fact that the Minister came in and in fact put pressure on the board to appoint this person because he was acting for so long. If we look at the other executives who have been acting for 12 and 16 and 18 and 24 months, why was he so exceptional and why was there such pressure on the board?
I will not speculate on the minister's reasons, but they are interesting. An individual such as this will believe that he is supportive. And as you it's been said a number of times, you know, you're talking here about a person who appears very manipulative. It doesn't take long for the unsuspecting to fall under his spell. You know, I don't know what happened to the minister. You know, I don't know what happened to all the other board members who supported him. But clearly, you know, in his attempt to be ungovernable, there were board members who insisted that he shall be subject to effective corporate governance like every other manager or employee within the organization.
If I could just follow up on that one.
We went through this route yesterday. Honorable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chair. Prof, can you maybe explain to us, Prof, how he managed to divide this board? A board that has professors, doctors, lawyers, of your caliber, by the way. How did this person manage to divide you? And if possible, can you, because it seems now we're now dealing with groups that support and groups that do not support. Can you in fact share with us, because all of you elected in the public process, can you tell us who are those who are supportive and who are those who are not supportive? That has happened before in the committee, just to confirm that.
There is a point I make in page 4, and I say that if you don't mind, I will just read two paragraphs. Well, let me read one of the paragraphs. The other one I've alluded to about unfettered powers. One of the major challenges that board was faced with was inexperience. Not everybody was experienced. Inadequate training on the part of board members. You know, we had an induction, but not everyone had been brought to speed as a board member. Indiscipline, familiarity, misdirected or bad corporate politics, internal power contests, poor and diminished business ethics, and possibly criminal motives. I once read a book by F.G. Bailey in sociology. It was titled Stratagems and Spoils, a very, very interesting book about behavior in organizations. Those are among the things that cause the board to be weak. Vusi Mabuso, Ronnie Lubisi, Krish Naidu, the late Hope Zinde, Rachel Kalidas, I will not talk about Ms. Nolutando Kosa, who left early, who I would have listed with you. Tembi Nkosi Bonagele, I would also not talk about him, he had left early. And of course, these are the people that I believe stood firmly for sound and proper corporate governance, you know. And I want to say, it's been mentioned in the course of the week, where I stand stood in relation to this. I will not talk about the rest. You know, it's not a matter of whether you are learned or not, or whether you're smart or not. There's a number of issues that maybe you will not be able to put your finger on in this process. This process may help you reach certain conclusions, you know, but maybe you will have new hypotheses that you may pass to another process which may follow and will be able to uncover some of the reasons why people were behaving the way people were behaving. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you very much, Prof. The engagement with the minister, which you tell to be a confidential meeting, now that things have come to this level, and I'll take it that part of your engagement with the minister, you're dealing with weaknesses that you have identified. Are you able now to take part of that confidential discussion and change that of the issues that you have identified, most critical areas that require intervention, but at the same time, This surprise that at the end you become a target, that you receive this letter on the 24th. What is your reading of that? What is your understanding in the reading of now that you have shared this confidential engagement with the minister, you have the challenges, and you pledge yourself to say, I'm prepared to go and assist, and then in return you then get what? What is your reading of that?
Well, it's been well established that there has been a kind of malevolent power in the organization, you know. That's the power, you know. And I was surprised that that letter was not withdrawn. And that's why I went on to resign, even against the advice of the people that I mentioned. They tried to talk to me not to resign. I said, guys, you're much younger. You know, I've been in the corporate world a long time. Reputation is one of your strongest assets. You've got to try as much as possible to protect it. I was prepared. I went into this board, you know, with great confidence and commitment, but I was hugely disappointed that I was not going to be able to be part of the team that will turn SABC around. And what we discussed with the minister, if I just give you a glimpse, ended up with us seeing things roughly the same way. You'd be surprised even about personalities, you know, but she needed help to be able to deal with the personalities, if you get my drift.
Thank you, Prof. Honorable
Thank you, Chair. Prof. Khumalo, you mentioned that Mr. Motsoeneng was very, and I'm quoting, was very influential. I had personal power. He flaunted with impunity. Now, how did he flaunt his personal power? Did he just say, I'm very powerful, you can't touch me? Or how did he express his personal power? Did he say, you know, as previous people have said, I will go to Pretoria if you do not give me what I want? How did he flaunt his personal power?
It would get into a board meeting, for instance. I'll just make you one example. Where we would be in a board meeting, and a board member participates in a way that he doesn't like. Then you feel like, hey, so-and-so has an agenda. You see, if we have an agenda here, you know, we can see through this agenda, etc., etc., etc. And the board member will talk very strongly and remind him his place and so on. And he'll say, look, I must tell you, I'm not afraid of you, you know. I can stand on my own, you know. I'm not afraid, you know, and things like that, which is bizarre in corporate environments. We don't see this in board meetings often, you know, or in, you know. So these are things, you know, where we had to intervene and say, hey, you know, that's not how things are done here. You don't discuss things like that here. I remember once, I had to intervene from the side when he was combating one board member. You see, that impunity, that's the kind of impunity that you saw. And this is why I say that, you know, look very carefully at the kind of psychology that you find in organizations. This is a very interesting phenomenon.
He ever flaunt political power, not his own personal power? Or political backers?
No, he didn't.
Your statement, you also mentioned a lack of discipline amongst members of the board. Please explain what you mean by that, and which members of the board were ill-disciplined, and how did they express that ill-discipline?
Yeah. I'm not going to mention names, ma'am, if you allow me, but I'm going to say to you kindly that members of the board must be careful that their point of entry is through the chief executive, and they should not allow themselves to be accessed by different executives or staff in such a manner that they become manipulated in the process. And I want to say this also, ma'am, about shareholder representatives, and mark my statement, because I have wanted to raise this point, because one of the greatest weaknesses in many organizations, especially public enterprises, is the incomplete line is the incomplete protocol. You know, as much as we focus on boards and directors and executives, we also should not take for granted that once a person has been deployed as a shareholder representative or into a position where they become a shareholder representative, that suddenly they know about organizations, they know about companies, they know about governance, and so on and so on. We all need training. We all need orientation. You know, there must be training not only of boards and directors, but also of shareholder representatives, so that they are aware of the dynamics that they are going to be dealing with, and behavior such as this behavior we see it now, you know, in terms of how it can come at you and even impugn your standing.
I'm afraid, Prof, I'm going to insist.
Yeah.
Members of the SABC board are appointed in an open and public process. They are appointed by Parliament. They remain accountable to Parliament. If there are board members appointed to a public organization who display ill discipline, the authority that oversees their appointment should be let known of this. So I'm going to insist, which board members displayed ill discipline?
Ma'am, I will answer your question, but I want to also want to make a point that I omitted to make in the beginning. You know, the headline issue here is whether the SABC board is fit to hold office. And my opening statement is that we're dealing here with a question that has already been answered. That, in fact, you have one non-executive board member, you know, board member, that's Professor Magube. You know, with great respect, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, what do you want to know? Because the board, for all intents and purposes, has ceased to exist. But I'm saying to you, ma'am, that the members of the board that I mentioned stood by sound and proper corporate governance, and that I wish the chairperson of the board had played her role effectively as a unifier. I hope this answers your question.
I can see that you're not very...
Please probe me. Yeah.
No. I can see that you're not 100% happy with the question. Can we reserve to find a discussion with the members in terms of one or two of the questions? Because you're not the first one, Prof, that felt uncomfortable. But we'll have to find a way, all of us, of dealing with it. But let me remind the meeting once again, and I think it's an appropriate time to do that. You're correct, Prof. Our mandate is whether the board is fit and proper. That's our mandate, whether the board is fit and proper. It's inescapable that we talk about actors in the past and what do they do in terms of where we are now. But we shouldn't lose... At the end of the day, we must answer the question whether the professor should be where he is, whether the CEO, the COO, and the CFO should be where they are, because that's the board as it stands now. That's really the question. And I've allowed us to talk about other individuals because they are intricately linked to it. But really, we should focus on these four individuals. I'm asking the members that we just focus on those four. Otherwise, we're going to get sidetracked and get into some other business, but I'm not going to suppress debate and discussion, but can we just stay on course as far as is humanly possible? Honorable Oliwe.
Thanks, Chuck. Prof, a witness who came to see us before you indicated that Mr. McConnell was always making sure that the bargaining unit is happy. Was that done within the policies of the SABC, or was there something which you can term compensation for a favor?
Mr. McConnell did not seem to follow due process. In fact, it was not in the purview of Mr. Mfenem to deal with bargaining units. The HR head who was here is the one with the outfit that deals with organized labor and those processes. He should not have been there. He's out of bounds.
What role did the chairperson of the board play when we were subjected to an executive who was interfering in you as non-executive as you were to take your decision? Like, for instance, you are indicating that in board meetings, Mr. Mutuanen would come, and then if the decision is not as he wishes, he'll rant and rave. What role did the chairperson play to deal with that?
He enjoyed tolerance. Mr. Mutuanen enjoyed tolerance, if not support, from the chairman of the board. He was not called to order, as we think he should be called to order. Certain board members had to prevail on him and call him to order. And I think that our chairperson should have played her role in firmness, pointing a direction, and also unifying us as a board. And I don't think that she did sufficiently. And if you like, that's one of the things that emboldened Mr. Mswene, amongst others.
This character of an ill-disciplined person, as you are portraying in your statement of when you talk about Mr. Mswene, at what stage did he display it? Before or after he was made permanent?
Oh, even before. Even before, I did not detail the discussions, for instance, during the time that Minister Karim came to visit us. You know, when he asserts himself, he does not care who he's talking with, whether you are a minister or you are a board member. You know, he would assert himself in that manner. He will drive his point. In fact, he will tell you he is not scared of you. You know, if I'm not mistaken, the minister himself was told that. So that is behavior that is consistent. You know, he showed a bit more comfort, of course, after the current minister came in. You know, that's the longer time that we observed him. But during the time of the other minister as well, he behaved in the same manner. You know, here you are talking about Mr. Mtwenin. That's the character you're talking about. And yes, of course, certain circumstances help a person act more the way they act. But that's him. And I don't think you'll see a lot of change in him unless, of course, you put him in a different environment and he's managed differently, he's led differently. But where?
You said in the beginning of your statement you have participated in many boards. But now when you were in SABC, you were subjected to a situation where executives were voting to when board decisions are to be taken. Remember, the executives are reporting to the board. Didn't you find that an anomaly?
Oh, we did. As long as a person is not a director, does not have fiduciary responsibilities, they should not take part in board processes. If they are a board member and there's no basis for them to recuse themselves, yes, they can take part. But yes, we raise our eyebrows, we question it when a person participates in a board and they are not a board member.
The last one from me, Prof, is to say, once you were a chairperson of HR and RAMCO, what role did you play to boost the morale of staff? Because the picture you are drawing is a picture of staff that was demoralized because of the conditions under which they were serving.
Yeah. You see, board members don't manage, they supervise. You know, one of the greatest things about leadership is getting out and staying out of your way. Never yield to a temptation to start doing work, the work of your managers or the work of your staff. We worked through, unfortunately, we had a totally disabled, weakened chief executive who ended up going. We had an HR head who made a presentation here yesterday who was also disempowered. We prevailed on the chair to talk about this situation, to say, let's address this situation, because if suddenly we would be found walking the floors and sitting down with people and so on, you create a chaotic situation. The way we act is to put in place management that would deal with situations that need to be addressed. And that's the way that as boards we work. We do not get in and intervene and do the work ourselves.
Thank you very much, Prof. Honorable Father.
Thank you very much, Chair. Prof, thank you very much for being with us here.
Thank you.
And admittedly, you are an accomplished scholar in your academic field, and I must say that I respect that. And I also respect the fact that you held many positions and served in a number of boards. Now, Prof, would you concede that the SABC board failed to discharge its duties in terms of the Broadcasting Act of 1999?
I would say yes. The board had its power diminished over a period of time. And definitely, the board, what you call the board today, is not fit to hold office. But this is a process that occurred. The board, over a period of time, of months, you know, lost its force as a board. The enthusiasm I talked about dissipated, you know. That's why some of us resigned, because we were not feeling that we're able to do the work.
That's fine, Prof. I think, thank you very much. I understand that. And you've cited a number of reasons.
Yes.
As to why that happened.
Yes.
But I want to say, Prof, there is a bit of circumvention of absolute truth in your responses. Mm-hmm. You've alluded to criminal motives, but you didn't substantiate that. And I want to put it to you, Prof, that probably one of the primary reasons for this are those primary motives. And I want to ask you to unpack those primary motives, those criminal motives you spoke about. Thank you, Prof.
Yes. Honorable Khoza, you will recall that I said that in the process of what you are doing now, you will be able to reach certain conclusions because of the facts that are before you. But you will avoid speculating and concluding on speculating. But you will follow through and check what could have been motives in this direction. You know, when things happen the way that they happen, you know, I would speculate and say what I've said, but I do not have the evidence. You know, I am saying to you, you have instruments. You can access documentation. You can ask questions. You could even recommend a formation of another process that will be empowered to come out with answers such as this. And I think that's fair.
Okay, Prof. No, I understand you, Prof. I actually accept what you are saying. It's helping us to move forward. But maybe you might wish to tell us, what was the role of the multi-choice bill, the TNA bill, the New Age, whatever bills that were there, and the digital migration? What role did all these factors play
in the failure of governance at SABC. Because it's well and good to say, to attribute all the failures to Saudi or the chair, the weaknesses of the chair. But there must be underlying motives behind the elevation of those individuals to this absolute totalitarian position. I fear a failed state, and that is why I want you to be honest with me.
I share the fear with you, ma'am. I share the fear with you, and I say that the questions you're asking are very important to ask. You know, you are involved in an inquisitorial process, which is supposed to take you in directions where you find such answers. And I think, and I'm not being facetious, ma'am, I cannot come here and be facetious. I'm saying, ma'am, you are on the right direction. You know, those issues, from where I sit as a board member, those issues seem to have a very adverse effect in the dynamic in the organization. You know, the issues that you have pointed at seem to have rocked the organization. I refer to you to a very embarrassing situation of a minister, you know, feeling that he's been so pushed and so rejected and so confronted that he says, look, what is wrong here? You know, if you guys don't trust me, you know, and if you think I have a motive other than my motive as your shareholder representative, can I take a lie detector? That's a very big thing to happen. So I'm saying, ma'am, that you have the power as Parliament. Parliament has the power to follow this through, and I would advise that this must be followed. Chair, I think I can only go. I cannot speculate.
No, your time is up, Mr. Swartz.
Thank you, and I just want to endorse my colleagues that have commended you with your background. Thank you, Professor.
Thank
I remember
you,
when you were still on Transnet and the good work that you've done.
Thank you, sir.
And maybe just as a brief comment,
yes, sir.
If you can assist us with recommendations going forward, with your, in writing, and not now, but in
yes,
writing, you've made some very good comments here. So dealing with this, I like the comment that you say some of these issues could be endemic to all SOEs.
Yes.
But now we're dealing with this particular SOE. And I would firstly like to ask you, have you been threatened or intimidated in any way before you came out?
No,
not at all.
No, sir.
Okay, because we did hear evidence last night of that, so I'm grateful for that.
No.
Secondly, then, I wanted to ask you to comment, because you received a letter from the minister on Christmas Eve to give reason, out of the blue. Then when you responded, if I heard you correctly, she seemed to say no, but she didn't mean it to come to you. Can you just clarify that?
Through her advisor. Her advisor actually told me that no, it was not meant for you, Prof. I said, but I've called the minister, she's not responded. Please tell the minister I've been trying to call her. I need clarification because I want to resign if I don't get an answer. Yeah, and he came back to me on the phone and said, Prof, you know, the minister is shocked. She doesn't want you to resign. She's asking you to stay. I said, no,
thank you.
I cannot get that from you.
But then there's another agenda at work here. How can it be that the minister is shocked at this when she doesn't seem to know? It shows to me a dysfunctional ministry. Secondly, on the January, Mr. Krishnaiyadu testified the same thing here, that he received a similar letter, and that when he was driving, he says in January 2015, he received a similar a letter whilst driving home. The minister called to apologize and said, I was an asset to the board and should not even contemplate resigning. He then goes further to say, this is a classic example of a dysfunctional ministry, which compounded the problems of a dysfunctional SABC board. Now surely, Professor Kamala, you'd agree with that, that there is not only what was going on at the board level and with the CEO, Mr. Motsvaneng, but also at a ministry level. There is something totally dysfunctional when a member of your asset, the minister, doesn't seem to have known about those letters that were going.
Sir, I'll take you back to my statement, and please, I'm going to ask you to take this statement very seriously. Shareholders or shareholder representatives should not be looked at outside the protocol that influences governance. They need training, they need orientation. I think for far too long in the public enterprises, this point has been ignored. The fact that a person yesterday becomes a minister, it does not mean that today they will know everything they need to know about business, about the Companies Act, and even other laws that govern the companies that they have been given responsibility for. They need to sit somewhere in government, whether it's the Department of Public Enterprises, the Presidency, or whatever, a training program, an intervention that helps those people who are entrusted with these resources, with these assets, to exercise the role that shareholder representatives exercise. Because some of the governance, in fact, is thwarted by the impact of shareholder representatives. That's a very far-reaching statement, and I underline it, and I think it must be done.
You see, our role is to hold the minister accountable as well. And so we appreciate those comments, but we sit in with a dysfunctional SABC and what would appear a dysfunctional ministry. And so we appreciate those comments, but our role is exercising that oversight, and we need to look into that as a useful recommendation for going forward. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Mr. Swart. Honourable Rufang.
Chair, the first question, just for clarity, who is the minister who wanted to take a lie detector?
Minister Yunus Karim.
The next message is, Prof, are you aware of the outcry by the worker community, especially the journalists at SABC, of the staff workers, I mean of staff members there, who are complaining about how Parliament, the board, and the minister have failed?
Yes, I'm aware.
And where do we locate their complaint? Within the structure of
Can you clarify?
Yes. I mean, you were responsible for REMCO
as
chair. Now I'm saying, for us to trace the unit, the board committee that is responsible to have dealt with these problems that we have, where would we locate it within the structure of
the situation of the SABC has much less to do with structures, with policies, etc. It has a lot to do with policies, with attitudes and behavior. You know, it's things that are being done or not done. You're dealing with a situation here. It was said yesterday that there has been an exodus of staff, including middle and some senior management. When you do not have sufficient people managing the organization, that situation you're referring to is going to get worse. It's not going to be cured by a board structure. It's going to be cured by making sure that there are people in place. I would say the people in HR and REMCO who are there now must address the skills report, the skills audit report that was discussed not long ago in Parliament. They must look at what needs to be done to strengthen the organization in terms of human resources.
There was a person who said to the board, it's very junior official, did it happen during your tenure? A person who was neither a CEO, a COO, nor...
Not in my time.
So, okay, during your tenure, Mr. Mswedi never sat in the board.
He was acting COO at the time.
At the time?
Yes.
Well, the information we have is that actually he sat there whilst he was a junior official, and he was actually dictating to board members. I assume it wasn't during your tenure.
It may have been during the interim board. You see, it's one of the things that I if I missed it, I would be surprised, because we question things like that, you know. Even at the times that we have questioned the behavior of Mr. Mswenen, It was at during board meetings. If you know if that happened and it was still junior to what it was during my term, it was maybe during the interim board time or in earlier board in earlier board sessions.
The increments, do you know anything about the increments that happened outside the normal procedure?
That was before my time.
You are aware that SABC is a national key point and you have staff there that were never vested.
I know that it is a national key point.
Staff issue and the vetting?
The vetting of staff is something that happens as a matter of course at different degrees and levels. There are functionaries and structures within the organization that address that.
I mean, I'm talking about the very senior people that are not vetted, your very people that are appointed by yourselves as a board.
And there's nobody who I am aware of who we appointed and who was not vetted. You know, the only person who was ever appointed during our time was Mr. Msenen and also Mr. Matlala, who became the chief executive, I think, shortly before I left.
Chair, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mukwena.
Thanks, Chair.
Bakuma.
Yes, sir.
Just help me understand the character of the minister that we're talking about here. You received a letter in December that said that you need to explain your non-dismissal. And then when you questioned later on, you were then told that the minister didn't seem to know anything about it. Mr. Naidu alluded to the same sort of process. And it seemed that there were many other board members who is this a minister who made the decision, or the decision seemed to come from somewhere else in your considered view?
You are tempted to wonder if this decision wasn't influenced somewhere else, actually. If she says that she doesn't know about it, you'll recall, sir, that the public statement that was issued by the ministry was that she had not received my resignation yet. The advisor knew about the resignation, and he actually pleaded with me to withdraw it. And even before I put it in, he pleaded me not to resign. So I think that you see, if you want to speculate, you will see a number of possible scenarios arising.
No, that's fine. I don't like to speculate too much. But there seems to be a trend of someone who didn't make the decision. It came to her from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Again, the appointment of Mr. Shaudi, as the permanent COO, a letter was presented to the board by the COO's representative.
By the chairperson of the board.
Okay, but it's a letter that came from.
I think
the CEO.
It was written by the COO's representative.
That's correct.
Yes.
It then occurs that at the meeting, a decision is made. Shortly after that, which is around 11 o'clock, the minister arrives and makes a speech to thank all of you for having made. In your considered view, again, is this a recommendation that came from the minister, from the board, or is it one that came from the COO himself?
We found it strange that the minister was actually on the premises and that she came in, and it did seem to be a manipulated process because it was strange in every respect.
Yeah. I'm painting a picture here, and the canvas seems to be telling me that the minister was not in control of what happened at the SABC. In fact, the minister got instructions from the COO. Am I on the right track from your considered view?
Mine is to give you the information that I've given you.
That's fine.
And you have powers that are greater than me.
No, that's
and
fine.
Your scope is different.
The decision to investigate
members of the board and other people within the SABC. And then the utilization of the Secret Service to investigate employees of the SABC. Was this matter discussed by the board, and what was the attitude of the board and
not my board. Not the board that not during my time, and not by Aaron Rempel, in that I chaired. Because if it was discussed during my time, I definitely would have raised the issue.
The last question. Then everybody seems to be blaming the delegation of authority framework for the power that seemed to have lied with the COO. But in your tenure, the MOI had not been amended yet. But you speak of a CEO who was undermined by the COO. What then was the impediment of the board to correct such a situation and to, in fact, put the COO in line?
The board had become divided among the people who seemed not to allow for the COO to be called to order by the chair of the board.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Conker, thank you very much, Honorable O'Connor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Weighing in on what Honorable Fanny O'Connor just said now, is it not given, you said, for instance, Prof, that you had a conversation, a meeting with the minister, and later on you received a letter. And when you tried to do a follow-up, no one knew about the contents of the letter, about the fact that you'd received a letter that said you could resign, or you should advise them of the reasons why you should not be removed as a member of the board, right? Is it therefore not, when we are speaking to the advisor of the minister, that is it therefore not plausible to argue that even the letter itself could have come from somewhere else other than the minister?
Except the letter bore what purported to be the minister's signature.
Thank you. I think you've answered my question. Prof, there is on page, I think it's page 3 of the document that you submitted to the committee, the very first bullet point there, you say the chairperson did not serve as a unifier of the board and the chief executive officer was not empowered and the executives were uncooperative. Right?
Yes.
And then on page 7, you talk about the acting CEO stated that he was the SABC himself.
Yes.
Now, I want to ask a question. Who were those executives who were uncooperative with him? Are you able to give us names?
Primarily, you know, it would be the CEO.
The CEO.
I may have spoken in plural, mm-hmm. but the real tussle for power,
yes,
with the chief executive was with the COO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people who challenged the CEO were not visible. The organization saw the theater of a COO, an acting COO who had usurped power from the chief executive.
Yes, I'm asking that question. I'll tell you why I'm asking that question. I think the uncooperative nature of the executive was demonstrated here a couple of weeks ago. So I wanted to find out who would be the ringleader in your view of that bad behavior or misbehavior, which is the uncooperativeness. But I think you've answered that question. I want to find out from you, then, Prof, you talk about, I think it's on page 5, where you're talking about in this document that you presented to us, which we thank you very much for doing that. You're talking about shareholder representatives needing orientation and training. What would, in your view, be the contribution of the shareholder or the shareholder representatives in the chipping away at the foundation of corporate governance principles at SABC? I know that you've cited inexperience as a contributing factor, but I think this point can be linked directly to what Honorable Koza said earlier, that out of this might also arise profit motives, the carelessness, the failure to do proper political oversight over the entity itself. I think you need to give us more details as to what would you say is what the contributing factor, you know, what role do they play in the chipping away of the foundation of corporate governance?
A conscious a role player in the chain of governance will be very conscious of the parameters and will not stray into areas outside their bounds and will not allow people to come into the area to access them when they should not access them. Especially also be mindful of people who would be coming in to manipulate them or to cause them to behave in a manner that should not behave, they should not behave. For instance, I keep saying, as board members, we don't do, you know, and I'm trying to underline the parameters of power and prerogative. And I'm saying here that, you know, many people have approached me and they have spoken with me, and my port of call is the chairman. If I don't get the chairperson, I also talk to other board members, but I avoid a situation where I go out of bounds. So I think it's very important for shareholder representatives to be mindful of the fact that they should not be accessed by staff, that they should be accessed through the board, through the chairperson of the board, and that some of the things that we see make you wonder. Some of the things that you see make you wonder. This is why I'm making this recommendation. That, you know, this may be naivety. This may be inexperience. This may be unsuspecting response. But in order to sharpen the senses of a shareholder representative, train them. Give them induction. Give them orientation. And make them understand. Maybe Professor King must look more into that now. Maybe other people who are dealing with issues of governance must look at this more, because I don't think that this has been looked at enough. Can I just make a point? Just
follow up. Yes, you would make the point.
Mr. Kwanko, your time is up, but you can make your point.
Yeah. You know, I just want to stress that what we are dealing with here, You may be looking at now as parliamentarians as something that happens out there. But board members are interviewed, are assessed, and are recommended by a structure of parliament. And then they are forwarded to the appointing authority for appointment. I think it's very, very, very important that we look at the stringency of the appointment of board members. And we also should look at what happens to get board members to a level to perform their functions the way that they should perform. I don't think that a parliament should take shelter in the fact that this thing is happening there at SABC and the board and the minister. You know, I think that Parliament must wonder, when we are all taking responsibility and we are all remorseful, I would like to call upon the relevant structures of Parliament to also take responsibility and be remorseful and look for ways in which they correct. How did it happen that certain people went through your net and you recommended them to the parliamentary, to the appointing authority, and they get appointed and these things happen?
Thank you, Prof. One question from my side, Prof. I've been, and it's just advice maybe, I've been grappling with this thing since we started. The Companies Act, director's liability is very, very sincere. It's very, very severe for the company. So my question that I'm grappling with, does resignation absolve you from liability? In other words, many of these things happened during your time, maybe, or during somebody else's time. Can we sit here and say, well, because Prof resigned, he's not liable according to the Companies Act? I just need to understand that, because it can't be that such rot happens under my watch. I leave the organization and I don't pay the price for it because I'm no longer there. I haven't understood it. With your experience, does resignation absolve you from your responsibility per the Company Act?
I think that I would take that advice if I were you. Because if things happen at the time you are not there any longer, you cannot be responsible for those things. Yes, you could be looking for an answer if some of the things happened 2 years ago when a person is there. You know, that's a different question. You know, if a person resigns to run away, you're dealing with a different situation to a situation where people resign and then things happen after they have left. Those are two different scenarios. It cannot be that you have such a long tail that because you once upon a time you were in a board, whenever it turns this corner and that corner, you also go and take responsibility. I would think that a number of things must happen to you, including being paid board fees, including being insured. Then a board insurance must cover former directors as well, if that's the case, I would think. But I think this is a matter for lawyers. I don't have the competence to be more succinct in responding to that question, sir.
Prof, as we have been saying, for anybody from the SABC that is present here that would wish to pose a question? No? Prof, as we've been saying to everybody else during the course of these proceedings, this session with you might have come to an end, but ours runs until at least the 28th of February.
Thank you.
And I do know that members have asked you for some written advice in terms of recommendations and so on. So between today and the 28th,
yeah,
if there's anything that you'd like to bring to our attention or empower the committee with, please feel free to do so.
Thank you.
And if we don't see you between now and Christmas, may you have a very Merry Christmas and be blessed and have a prosperous New Year, sir. Thank you for attending.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, the next witness is here. We're running a few minutes late. We should have been halfway through that session, so I'm only going to allow 2 minutes left stretch and then we can start because we are running half an hour late.